Hey guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is the Notorious Women Podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Yes, yes.
Some of history's most notorious cat single lady women.
Yes. But also some of those women that are not notorious cat single lady women. We're going to call them out. Okay.
Yes. Yes. We are. Because women can be just as awful as men.
Yeah, you guys.
But we tend to be more awesome, even when we're murdering. We're at it. Just, you know.
I don't want to like take sides, except if I were to take sides, it would be with women.
Yeah.
But like, I don't want to take sides.
Right.
Right. Yep. But if I were to, it would be with women.
Yeah. Because men, I mean, we love men. Unfortunately, I love them a little bit too much, which makes me want to strangle some of them.
Lavetta, I love one so much, I married him. I mean, I know. Come on. I went too far.
Shout out to the wonderful men out there.
He's really great. I love him.
He is. And there's so, and also, I know a lot of wonderful men. I only want to kill the terrible one. So,
same.
On that note, mine is a little long today, so let's get started.
Okay.
We'll keep the banter down to a minimum this week, unless you have something you want to talk about.
Nah, it's not too hot anymore, so I have nothing to bitch about. Okay.
I know. Thank God. Thank you, Jesus. On that note, but before we get into it, guys, remember to follow us on all the things.
Yes.
I haven't said this in a while, so copy the link. Because you love us, copy the link for our podcast and send it to your friend. Don't just tell them about it. Send it to them. Because when they click on it, then that counts as like a download for us.
Well, also they click on it and they'll be like, thank you so much for these two wonderful new people in my life. And you'll be like, you're welcome. And listen, we're like free. So we're like a free gift. Okay.
Exactly.
You're welcome. Holidays are coming up around the corner. Just, you know. Good ideas.
Yep. That's right. For Festivus, the rest of us, Kwanzaa, Christmas, all of it.
I like if you
start Hanukkah
with Festivus.
You know,
that's
I'm a Seinfeld girl.
Oh,
God.
First one that came out of your mouth. Halloween decorations are everywhere, and you're like Festivus. Okay.
The thing about me is like when it comes to comedy, I love all kinds of comedy. I love stupid comedy, highbrow comedy, whatever. But I love like a cantankerous upset, like getting upset over the smallest things. And George's father on Seinfeld.
Oh God. Yeah.
It's so funny. He just gets upset about everything. And I love Festivus, so. And so, let's get started. I believe I am first this week. I have, you know, the debate happened last week.
It did.
Kamala whooped that ass.
Yes, she did.
Summarily. I'm not surprised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I found so funny? I just have to say this. Like, he doesn't know what to do, because... You know, she's a woman that has a power and authority, but also because he clearly wants to fuck her. Like, he clearly wants to have sex with
her. He cried little bitch tears. You know what I'm saying? She was like, you don't have anyone go to your rallies. And he was like, you know, like, it was a little bit satisfying.
I have a lot of people going to my rallies. but so we're in the political season. There's no way around that. But so I want to pay homage to many, many people, many women who came before this moment, who have contributed to this moment. Because that's the thing about history. No one does it on their own. It's accumulation of the efforts of so, so many people.
Yes.
And I know people are like, politics is boring. I'm like, I know, but we got to be adults. We got to go out. We got to vote. You know, if you don't have time to do other stuff.
I'll just mark down Democrat, 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 and then just send it in.
That's okay. This time, just do that. Like, none of this. No. We're in America. Don't you know Americans are not very bright? And I'm saying that as an American.
Yeah, no, we're totally American. So if we say that, it's okay. You can say it too.
Yeah, this time, don't even think about it. Just down ballot. Let's just do this.
We're not going back for a world wherein you can think about it. But this time around, we don't live in that world. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't live in that realm. So so I wanted to probably in the next couple episodes, I might, you know, again, I love a murderess, so I might throw one of those in there. But we are in election season here in the United States. So I wanted to highlight a notorious woman. She was notorious in her day. Obviously, she's a like many women who were notorious during the when they were doing what they were doing, were demonized in so many ways and you know, tried to be stopped. But she is now a heroine, a hero, shero today. And she is a wonderful Latina.
Yeah.
That's the only great Spanish pronunciation you're going to get. Because
it was really good.
Yeah. So my notorious woman this week is the great Dolores Huerta.
Oh, yes. My God.
Yes.
Tell me everything.
All right, so let's get into it. Dolores Huerta was born on April 10th, 1930 in Dawson, New Mexico, a small mining town in the mountains of northern New Mexico to Juan and Alicia Fernandez, a farm worker and miner. Her father later became a state legislator in 1938.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Now, when, Dolores is the second of three children. So she has two brothers. And her parents, unfortunately, divorced when she was very young, about 3 years old. So after the divorce, her mother moved her and her two brothers to Stockton, California. And she'd to live and help be raised by her grandfather. Now, while her mother, Dolores' story. This happened. So now her mother, like many women, especially during that time, you don't really have a lot of options. So many women, and in fact, women often drive small businesses in a lot of ways because of this. And they've always done that. All types of women, all from all backgrounds. But generally, this is a way for a woman to not only feed her family, but to also have some autonomy and some control.
Flexibility, too, because you got babies. You got to deal with those babies, but you still got to make money. Yeah.
So it doesn't say where her grandmother was. So J.D. Vance would be very upset that the grandfather's helping out. But there it is.
What? But he's a man with testicles. I'm confused.
They go low, we get petty. So, yeah. So Alicia, her mother, worked, you know, various jobs as a waitress, as a cannery worker, until she was able to buy a small hotel and restaurant.
Okay.
So that's amazing.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Now, according to Dolores, her mother's independence and entrepreneurial spirit was one of the primary reasons that she became a feminist later in life.
Okay. Yes.
Now, not only was Alicia, Dolores's mother, a hardworking woman, she also was very kind and compassionate. They lived in basically a migrant area where the people, long time ago, not so long ago, California belonged to Mexico people. When you're telling Mexican people to go back where they came from, they were here long before the border. So, and that is the words of Dolores herself in her TED talk. And it's so true. So, but back then, a lot of the migrants would live in Mexico and come across for the seasons.
Yes.
Whatever needed to be harvested, work, spend their money here in the United States, and then go back across the border and help their families. And that was very helpful for California, for them.
Yep.
And it worked, right?
Everyone won.
Everyone won. So, but at this time, they barely paid the workers enough to even be able to do that. Because of what? Greed. And when I say they, I mean the people who are not doing the actual work, but who are sitting in cool mansions and big homes while the people are sweating out in the fields. So so her mother, because many of these people, you know, shared her cultural background, but she could relate to them, but also because she was a kind and empathetic woman, and you don't have to look like the person that you have kindness and empathy for. So Alicia's mother would often, so a lot of her customers were the low wage workers that came to the restaurant and the hotel. And she would often waive their fee altogether or offer them really low wages so they could be able to afford to get out of the sun, to get out, you know, have shelter.
Right. Yeah.
And she, Alicia herself, became a participant in the community affairs. and different organizations, along with Dolores when she was a kid, because of her mother's influence. She got involved with community affairs, numerous civic organizations, and the church.
Okay.
Yeah. And so growing up, Dolores was, you know, she was exposed to all kinds of people, not only the migrant workers that were coming over from Mexico, but also Filipino people, African-American people, Japanese people, and Chinese people.
Yeah.
Many of them were mostly working families, and they were all living together and just trying to make a living, and not just trying to make a living, but have a you know, make a living where they can have some comforts in life. That's all most people want. So, unfortunately, she also had to put up with discrimination. Like, so for instance, while growing up, a school teacher of hers accused her of cheating.
What?
Because her papers were too well written.
Oh my God. Damn.
These are children that adults are picking on. Like,
the fuck?
This is too well written. You can't be possibly be this smart. What?
You with your Mexican heritage.
Yeah.
Only white people are smart. Okay, guys. Let's check the receipts on that sentence.
So
right
you're
there.
Only smart if you were born, which she was, by the way.
Actually,
she's an American,
fully American.
But if your grandparents were born on this side of the border, that makes no sense. Bigotry is so stupid, but it's bigotry math.
Yeah.
And in 1945, at the end of the after the war, where she saw many of her neighbors being trotted off to internment camps.
Yeah,
Japanese American. So, but
Central California got hit. I mean, everywhere got hit, but like a lot of people there. Ugh.
Yep.
It's disgusting.
But she also had to put up with white men beating one of her brothers for wearing a zoot suit, a popular fashion for Hispanic and black men during this time. There's a whole zoot suit riot that you guys can go and look up, and we might cover it. But I think it's mostly dudes, so we might not cover it. But
it is mostly dudes.
It's a big, big deal. But that didn't stop Dolores, like many POCs and women. It didn't stop her. She she pushed on. You have to ignore that kind of stuff and until you can't, because sometimes you just can't after a while. But while attending Stockton High School, she was active in numerous school clubs and was a majorette.
Okay.
And growing up, she was a dedicated member of the Girl Scouts until she was 18.
She's like literally a Girl Scout.
Yeah. She excelled at school, and after graduating high school, she went on to receive a teaching degree from the University of the Pacific's Delta College. She married a man, Ralph Head, while a student, and had two daughters, though the couple soon divorced. She then went on to marry Ventura Huerta, with whom she had five children.
Wow.
Though that marriage didn't last as well. She would eventually have 11 children.
That's enough. I'm sorry. That's a lot. Okay.
One.
Damn.
One is enough. So.
Girl, I got two. Now, I'm so tired. Okay, go on.
In the 1950s, she taught school, and she taught mostly of the migrant children who came to her school, and she would notice that they would often come and they were hungry, and because they had to work with their families in the field, and they were just so tired, and you know, she. Coming from her background, having that empathy and the love of not only her people, all people, but especially her people. Obviously, she has a commonality with them. So it's affecting her more to see her people who look like her and her family go through this. So she soon pivoted from being a teacher to activism.
Okay.
She co-founded the Stockton chapter of the Community Service Organization, aka the CSO, which led voter registration drives. Voting's important.
Yep. Number one thing you could do.
That's right. And this is the 50s, and fought for economic improvements for Hispanics.
Uh-huh.
That same year, the CSO founder, Fred Ross Sr., introduced her to executive director Cesar E. Chavez,
okay.
A like-minded colleague.
Yes.
Now, the two soon discovered that they shared a common vision of organizing farm workers in particular.
Okay.
An idea that was not in line with the CSO mission. And this happened a lot in the 50s and 60s. And again, we have all benefited from the work that all these people did, all the activism, no matter where. The United States is huge. And I think that's another thing people forget. So what happens in California does affect people in New York, does affect people in Florida, does affect people in Utah.
It does. Yeah.
It might take a while to get there. And so sometimes you don't even know where the benefit is coming from, that the work that people have done out in California, you know,
I mean, especially they say back that, then. They say that what when California goes a certain way, that's the bird in the coal house, whatever, telling you where America is heading.
Part of it is because our economy here is so large in this state as well. So, but, you know, again, as Americans, we all come from some other place, but we all benefit from the works of each other in each community. Mm-hmm. So because she was specifically her and Cesar Chavez were specifically focused on Hispanic people and especially the farm workers, the people who are actually the backbone of the California economy and the many of the fruits and vegetables and everything that goes out in other parts of America. So
they basically are the backbone of the whole country. I'll say it.
Yeah.
They basically help every one of us live our lives. So.
Yeah. And be able to like, in her TED talk, it was so interesting. She was like, yeah, like when you, like we all eat bananas, right?
Yeah.
Bananas. But the people in these countries that they get bananas from, and then the workers that help with agriculture production here in the United States, those people are getting pennies to do what they're doing. But we wouldn't get bananas in the grocery store if it wasn't for any of these workers.
Yeah.
She's like, the money's going to the president of Chiquita Bananas, who are often not from those communities and not connected to those communities. And yeah, okay, it's they're the boss, so they get the bigger share. But what they were asking and what they were seeing is that the farm workers were not getting their fair share.
There you go.
That's all. So because what her and Cesar wanted to do was not in line with CSO's mission, they broke off. They continued to do their work with them, but they broke off and founded the National Farm Workers Association, the NFWA. And it was the predecessor of the United Farm Workers Union, the UFW, which formed 3 years later, Now, of like, again, she's out there doing it. She's a young woman, got a young family, but she's still a single mother at a different time. She's out there working because this is very, very important to her. So she, her sense of duty was formed by obviously her mother, Alicia, and her experience as a child with her neighbors, but also by her Girl Scout teacher. She gave a special shout out to Catherine Kemp, who she says was gave her a major influence in her life in regards to her love of nature. Because she would also, she's an environmentalist activist as well. Environmental activist as well. Some of her other influences was her girlfriend, Charse Satterfield, who was an African-American woman who introduced her to African-American culture and values. And Fred Ross, who was the founder of CSO, who taught her and Cesar how to organize and make it effective in an effective way. Okay. She was also influenced by many, many other people, including feminist icons Gloria Steinem and Eleanor Schmiel. So who she credits with really giving her the words and the permission to not to be hesitant about fighting for women's rights in particular. Because as much as she was Caesar's right hand, she also was the greatest thorn in his side. A lot of it came from sexism.
Yeah.
Just like,
right.
It reminds me of like in the civil rights movement with black people, like, you know, that was going on within in the movement as well. A lot of the women would do just as much work as the men, but the men would get all the credit. And that's what was really kind of happening with her and Caesar. Like, Cesar Chavez, if you're here in LA, his name is everywhere. Dolores' name is not everywhere. It should be everywhere.
It should be everywhere. And that's like literally why we do what we do, right? That's the point. With Cesar Chavez is Dolores Huerta.
Yeah.
We should have Cesar Chavez / Dolores Huerta Day. Yeah. But y'all, if you're not from California, we do have a Cesar Chavez Day.
Which is important. Don't get us wrong.
He's great. Yeah, absolutely. But he wasn't alone. He didn't do it by himself.
no one can do any of this work by themselves. So she, now they were infamous for their knockout fight. Well, not physical fights, but arguments. They would argue. She's very passionate. He's very passionate. And they're very passionate about helping farm workers in particular. But, you know, a lot of times you clash on how to do certain things. Right. But Dolores herself said that she viewed their arguments as a healthy and necessary part of the growth process of, you know, of their worthwhile collaboration.
OK.
But she also, again, she's doing all the work he's doing. Plus, she's raising children and putting up with the expectations put on women that you need to be home.
Listen, she's not only raising these children, but if she had a total of 11, she's pregnant with them. Okay. Exactly. And being told to be barefoot and go cook something for your babies. And
which
meanwhile, she's
she
trying
still
to change
had
the world.
To do because right. they, the expectation is like you still have to cook for your children. You know, where the men can have other people cook for them and then go about their business. So,
and they do.
And it was a personal sacrifice because, you know, there's a documentary that I'll talk about shortly that her older children would say that she and she even admitted I had to basically leave them at leave them and go off and do this important work. And they felt that because all they know is that their mom is not there. You know, and she said that's my one true regret, you know, having that. Be an experience for my children. But again, she's doing important work, but the social expectations is that you don't need help. You need to be there yourself with these kids. Like you said, barefoot and pregnant. They literally, that's what they wanted.
And
women
a lot
to be.
Of families too, like culturally, the older siblings do help out. Listen, there's a children's book I'm obsessed with. I've talked about it before. I'm still reading it. There's more. It's called The Vanderbeekers. They have five kids. They live in Harlem. They're biracial and they have these adventures. I'm obsessed. And what I've noticed is that those two. Okay. So Jesse and Issa are the twins. They're the oldest. Yes. I love this. Let me be rich. I will produce this series. And they're the 15-year-old twins, 14, some, but they're watching the little ones. And it's not even, I will say when you read, it's not even a negative. The parents are still parenting the children. But in terms of the day-to-day stuff, yeah, the siblings are helping out a lot. You know, and that's okay. It's okay.
That's okay, but it may not be okay to the siblings.
Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe there's some therapy necessary, and I get it. I do.
Yeah, but I think also because, again, she's not always married. She doesn't always have the partner there. And then if she did have a partner, men back then were very different than the men today.
Yes.
They resented being, you know, many of them resented, even the good men resented being made to stay home with children. Like, they're like, you should be here.
Listen, I feel like that's still happening in
it's definitely happening.
Almost
but imagine
most parts of the world, but like
in
back
the 50s
then,
and the 60s,
it was like 97% of men assumed, as
even
opposed
the good
to
ones.
76% of men who assumed, which would be today, I think.
So she's juggling a lot, but she, you know, she's being undeterred. And she just pushed forward with all kinds of stuff. And back then, these activists weren't, a lot of times they weren't just involved in one organization. They're involved in multiple organizations.
It
takes work, mental work and physical work to do these things. So she, so again, she was dealing with that. She was on her path doing something that she really believed in and she felt passionate about, but she was running into these gender barrier issues.
Right.
It's basically BS. Now, while directing the first national boycott of California table grapes out of New York, she came into contact with Gloria Steinem.
Okay.
And the beginnings of the modern feminist movement, because again, feminist movement has been going on for probably about 100 years at that point. So she rallied behind the cause because she's like, oh yeah, her own experience is like, yeah, women, we need to specifically focus on women's issues. Like I'm focusing on Hispanic civil rights issues in California, but also specifically farm workers is my area of expertise.
Right.
And the thing that I'm really, really focusing on. Right. It doesn't mean you don't care about other movements. And I don't know why people don't know, like you're only one person. There's only so much you can do. So you have to focus in on movements that you can affect change in and that you're focused on. It doesn't mean that you don't support. Doesn't mean she doesn't support Black civil rights movement in the South, and then that's spreading all over the United States. She doesn't mean that, but her focus is on Hispanic civil rights, and particularly the farm workers.
You know, it works better if we work together as a community, but we have people who can focus narrowly on those things.
And that's
because
what she
and
Caesar would do.
Because if you spread yourself so thin, you're going to get nothing done. That's how
gay
marriage
movements.
Came to pass. All they were fighting for is specifically gay marriage. Did they care about lots of other things? Of course they did.
Yeah.
But to get shit done, you got to focus. Yeah.
You got to focus. So when she came out to New York and she got in touch with, got connected with people like Gloria, she was like, oh yeah, I can do this too. That's important too, you know? And then maybe even adding some of that into her fight back home.
Right.
Now, despite ethnic and gender bias, she helped organize the 1965 Delano strike of 5,000 grape workers and was the lead negotiator in the workers' contract that followed. Because that's another thing. They did not have contracts with like set prices.
Oh.
They did not have organizational bargaining power. The union she was trying to, that will come soon after that. But it's like you organizing the workers to demand certain things and to negotiate contracts for base livable wage.
Right.
Right. A fair wage. This is what you have. This is why you have to organize. So she was a lead negotiator in the workers' contract that followed. Throughout her work with the UFW, she organized workers, negotiated contracts, advocated for safer working conditions, including the elimination of harmful pesticides.
Oh, my God. Yes.
These rich people will have you working in all kinds of environments. They don't care that as long as they get their money. And
they
as long as they
care.
Get what's the quota at the end
right.
of the day.
Exactly.
That's the only thing they care about. They don't care how you do it. And they don't care how the workers are harmed. We see it in everything. It, basically, it's modern day slavery is what it was in another name. Right. Sharecropping, coal miners, same thing. They have to organize. It's like, I'm not going down there when you haven't like tested that it's safe for human beings to go down in there. Like, what are you talking about? Like, this is why you need organizations. This is why you need unions. She also fought for unemployment and health care benefits for agricultural workers. Because, again, they were getting none of this. She was also the driving force behind the nationwide table grape boycotts in the late 60s that led to the successful union contract by 1970.
Nice.
So she's starting this stuff in the 50s, though, basically. And by 1970, they get a successful union contract.
Man, you got to have a lot of patience to do what she does.
And you know what else you have to do when you're on the ground working with the workers, working with the negotiating with the owners and the money people? You also have to get legislative power, which is why you have to vote. And when you vote, you have to always continue to hold your people to the fire. But you also have to work within that system or to change it, because that is how America is actually set up. So she became one of UFW's most visible spokespeople. She also acknowledged that Robert F. Kennedy acknowledged her in helping him secure the 1968 California Democratic presidential primary.
No kidding. Okay.
Unfortunately, moments before he was shot.
Yeah.
Because you have to work with politicians because they legislate, they write laws that affect your life on the ground in the
100%.
Field.
Yep.
So they're not perfect, but you have to identify those candidates that you can work with. Because a lot of these people come.
Sorry, I don't know what just happened. Go on.
Well, the thing is that these people they're in another bubble, right? They're in that legislative bubble. Many of them do come from privilege. And a lot of times they're not aware of what's going on in the ground. Even if they're trying to get your vote. So if they're trying to get your vote, that's why they have to start touring. That's why they have to get on the ground and talk to people. And when they talk to somebody like Dolores Huerta, who's like, this is what I'm going to need for my people, for what I... Then you also talk to, I'm sure she was not a legislator, but Maxine Waters, a version of her, whatever she was.
Yes.
This is what I'm going to need for here.
Exactly.
And then when they go back to Washington, they're like, oh, I've been on the ground and this is what our people need.
Mm-hmm.
This is how not voting, sitting out the legislative process does not help you. If you're doing all this work on the ground, but then in Washington where they write laws, if you're not connected with any of those people, you're just going to be spinning your wheels. And
it's not going to happen. It's literally not going to happen. Because of what you just said, like, this is how America is run. You have to learn to work within it. She's so smart. Okay.
Yeah. Like, she's working. She's doing all this really hard work, ground level work with, again, talking directly to the people that own these plants to get workers. But then it's like, you also have to put pressure on top for these people to be willing to even do this. Because it's not lost on me that she got that union contract in 1970. Right.
Yeah.
Kennedy and his predecessor, and his the person that came after him, she had already started planting that seed at that level. So it's not lost on me that they were actually, they had more to bargain with, and that finally got some real results that were permanent in 1970. Because it's permanent. That's important. Permanent change. Now, we've all heard of Yes, We Can.
Yes, we have. I mean,
si se puede in Spanish.
Big posters. Yes. Si se puede. I said it wrong. Now, sorry, but I like that. Go on.
Dolores Huerta is the one that came up with that. A lot of people probably don't know that, but she did a strong Latina.
Yes, girl.
So in 1972, the grower lobby that dominated state politics. Again, they're fighting on the ground, but they're fighting state politics, the state legislature, the governor, all of this stuff. So all of these people are so powerful that many Latino leaders, especially on the local level, like Dolores and those that she's working with, declared that they could not beat these people. They couldn't beat them.
Oh.
They couldn't force them to come and really negotiate, because they're also negotiating different industries. Keep in mind, right? Like in California, California has what, the third largest, somebody told me the stat and I didn't believe it. I had to look it up. California has a economy that that is compared to many countries.
It's the sixth largest economy in the world.
I have to look that up, but I'm okay. It's Miriam said it, so I'm going to back her up.
Six and seven. In the world. So if California was its own state, it is its own state. I'm stupid. Yeah.
America, but that's how large.
Public education, but that's how large. So if it was its own country, we would be the sixth or seventh most prosperous country.
That's how large California is, right? So this woman in Stockton is trying to work and help farm workers there, but there's farm workers all over California.
Oh, yeah.
Picking all kinds of, you know, harvesting all kinds of things, right?
Yeah, we produce so much produce. You see what I did there?
So that is why you need help and you need allies in the state legislature, right? To pass laws that help statewide, because otherwise you're going piecemeal to different communities, different counties throughout this large state, right? So at this point, these people are like, these little people, we don't have to deal with them. We don't have to deal with them. And this is in 1972, after they've actually successfully, in one area, gotten a union contract, right?
Right.
So they're trying to, her and Caesar are going all over the state, trying to help farm workers everywhere, right? Which make up a large portion of the California economy.
Right.
But they were having very hard time with all of them. And often these leaders and the workers, when they would be talking to them and trying to, you know, rile them up and be like, we can do this. They'd be like, no, se puede. No, it can't be done. No, it can't be done. It can't. And they kept repeating it in Spanish. Then Dolores responded, sí, se puede. Yes, it can be done. So it can be translated to, yes, I can do it. Yes, we can do it.
And now it's, si se puede. Okay, sorry.
So she immediately picked that up, that call up, and made it the slogan and the rallying cry for the farm workers campaign in Arizona during the 25th day fast that she and Caesar come up with. Again, this is activism on the ground. How can we get the attention on us? How can we really move forward? Everybody's using nonviolent tactics that we all got from India, right?
Yep.
You're using forcible. She was always a nonviolent person. you know, which is something that they saw was being effective in the South, right? With the Black civil rights movement. Yeah. But the Black civil rights movement is a civil rights movement for all of us. So, but it's associated with obviously Black people, because we're pushing that charge, especially in the South and in the North, but especially in the South. So where Jim Crow was in full effect. Now, so she was like, no, si se puede. And that became the long guiding principle from that point on for the UFW.
That's awesome.
And it inspired the accomplishment of goals. It was something that was short, quick, sweet, and people could really, really understand. It eventually became federally registered as a trademark of the UFW.
No kidding.
And it has been widely adopted by other labor unions and civil rights organizations and drew widespread political and media attention as a rallying cry during the U.S. immigration reform protests. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The slogan has also been used in other countries such as Spain and Venezuela.
No kidding.
And more recently and more famously, probably in recent time, in the U.S. by President Barack Obama, who adopted the English version. Yes, we can. First, during the Democratic Party of Illinois primaries leading up to 2004 Illinois elections to the U.S. Senate. So that was for his campaign for the Senate. And then it became the slogan of his 2008 presidential campaign, Yes, We Can.
Yes, we
did. Was the theme of him in the New Hampshire primary as well. There is a song that became for it. Celebrities picked it up. But Si Se Puede started with Dolores Huerta, this
amazing,
wonderful Latina. Born here in the United States, in her work with farm workers in particular, but she was always a civil rights and workers advocate and activist. So now in 1973, she led another consumer boycott of grapes that resulted in the groundbreaking California Agricultural Labor Relations Act of 1975. Again, you need that act.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Which allowed farm workers to form unions and bargain for better wages and conditions. Throughout the 1970s and 80s, Dolores Huerta worked as a lobbyist to improve workers' legislative representation. Again,
good.
On the ground is great, but we on the ground is great, and we have to do it at the legislative level.
We need it all, yeah.
Now, this work is very dangerous. I think people just don't realize that with these online activists that we have today. Like, being on the ground is very, very dangerous. And not because you are creating a dangerous situation, but because oftentimes you don't need to create a dangerous situation. If you're doing this work honestly and just advocating for those who need help and those who don't have power, you're going to run into this. So at age 58 in 1988, Dolores suffered a life-threatening assault while protesting against the policies of then presidential candidate George Bush in San Francisco. A baton-wielding officer broke four of her ribs and shattered her spleen. Yeah. This is a woman. She's a tiny, tiny woman.
I know it's a podcast, so I should say something, but I just need a second because... I know that this isn't a podcast about police brutality, but we just need to know that it happens.
Yep.
And she's a tiny woman.
She's a tiny, tiny
woman.
And
she is a non-violent tiny woman. So why are we beating her up, officer?
Because you can. It was so public outrage resulted in the San Francisco Police Department changing its policies regarding crowd control and police discipline.
Well, that's a really good idea, San Francisco.
Sorry. Yeah. She was eventually awarded an out-of-court settlement, but she got her ribs and her...
Dude, you're never going to be completely the same after that.
Yeah, no. You're never going to be... This person would come and attack you and you're like, I'm not even attacking you.
What the fuck?
So she had a lengthy recovery period, obviously, and she took a leave of absence from her work to focus on women's rights.
Okay.
So after she got better, she started to focus on women's rights. She went across the country for about 2 years on behalf of the feminist majority's feminization of power. And the goal was to get 50-50 power by the year 2000 campaign.
Yeah, fuck it.
It included her encouraging Latinas to run for office. The campaign resulted in a significant increase in the number of women representatives at the local, state, and federal levels. She also served as national chair of the 21st Century Party, founded in 1992 on the principles that women make up 52% of the party's candidates and that officers must reflect the ethnic diversity of the nation.
I agree, girl. You know, I have to say, it is so much better now than it was then, but it's not even close to what it needs to be.
No, it's not even close, but it's so much better because of people like Dolores Huerta.
Yeah. I'm like cynical because I don't think it's good enough, but thank God for her. I mean, my God, it was like mostly man and a woman.
Well, you know what? We would have more if apathy. That's another thing she talked about. Yeah. I highly recommend you go and watch her TED talk. She talked about apathy. Okay. Apathy is the number one killer of progress. Because people get a little and they're like, oh, this is fine. Like, it's never going to get any better. No, you have to keep pushing forward. Like, we have to keep moving forward.
Yeah. And it doesn't, if every person could be a little less apathetic.
Yeah.
And do a little bit more. Or maybe try to say,
I know you're saying that on air, but you actually do the work. You go out, you do what you do in your community in your way, and you always vote. So
I never ever feel like I do enough. I'm consistently down on myself for that, to be totally honest with you. But
you do the bare minimum plus. There's people out there who don't even want to do the bare minimum. And that's getting up and going to vote, girl. Like, they really don't even want to do the bare minimum. Especially here in California, it's so easy to vote.
It really is. If you live in a state where it's harder, it's maybe even more important to get yourself and to get your community, you know, to vote. And it's also like, I was telling you the other day, like, you don't have to start a fight with someone in your community that you might disagree with. You can just throw out some ideas in a very kind way. That's what I do. Of just like, well, I feel like we have two candidates and I'm going to vote for what I think will be better for the overall country overall. I don't have to get into it, because if we did, I would lose. Because we probably, if someone is considering voting the other way, we probably don't have a lot in common. So, you know,
and here's the thing, like, when people say, well, I don't want to, it's like if you have the choice of chicken and fish at a wedding, on a plane or whatever. Right. Yeah. You can say, I don't want either. But if enough people say, I don't want either, then either the chicken or the fish is going to win out.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, if the fish is poisoned, but the chicken is dry. You should still order the chicken. Like, make sure you get the chicken, even though it's a little dry.
Because what happens is, if you stop ordering the fish or the chicken, there'd be nothing else to order. No. Sooner or later, there'd be nothing to order.
And honestly, like, someone else could, like, convince everyone that the poisoned fish was a good idea.
Yeah.
Right? And then you have to eat poisoned fish. I really like this analogy. I'm running with it.
Yeah. You know, and just one last thought on that. Like, I saw Kamala talk to this local black business owner, a young man. He owned a barbershop, and she went in and she was like, you know, I need your help. And he was like, I feel like, you know, I give my vote and then I see the people, I give my vote. I think he's talking on the local level, and they walk by me like they don't know us once they get the vote. And she's like, I understand that frustration. She's like, here's the thing. In politics, two kinds of people have power. The people who write the checks and the people who vote. The people who write the checks have the same amount of power as the people who vote, unless you stop voting. Because the less people who have the power to vote, then the people who write the checks have more power.
You all better get out there and vote, okay? Don't give them power. Hell no.
Don't let the people who write the checks have all the power. So now I'm almost done here. Now, during the 1990s and 2000s, she worked with to elect more Latinos and women to political office, and has continued to champion women's issues, as well as environmental issues, as well as workers' issues, unions, so on and so forth. And she's also worked with numerous candidates, including President Clinton, Congressman Ron Dellums, Governor Jerry Brown, Congresswoman Hilda Solis, President Barack Obama, and President Joe Biden.
Okay.
There are four elementary schools in California, one in Fort Worth, Texas, and a high school in Pueblo, Colorado, named after Dolores Huerta. Mm-hmm. She was also inducted into the California Hall of Fame in March of 2013. She is the recipient of many honors, as she should be, including the Eleanor Roosevelt Human Rights Award and the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Yeah,
the highest civilian honor. That was awarded to her by President Obama.
I was going to make a joke that Trump did it, but that was pretty funny because he wouldn't. Because he's a bad person. Okay.
Like he has always been like, oh no, I got this from Dolores Huerta. Yes, we can. But yeah. I feel like the media didn't always, like they do women in general, like have sort of like
made that a little bit. Instead.
Yeah, but no, it is her thing and he's always given.
But
he's
Obama always given, was like, good idea. Thank you, Dolores.
Yeah. I will. And he's always given her. He's always given her credit for that, as well as other people who've used "Si se puede." So yes, we can. That is Dolores Huerta. But I think it's just wonderful as president that he presented her with the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
I love that so much.
Now, upon receiving the award, Dolores said, quote, "The freedom of association means that people can come together in organization to fight for solutions to the problems they confront in their communities. The great social justice changes in our country have happened when people came together, organized, and took direct action. It is this right that sustains and nurtures our democracy today. The civil rights movement, the labor movement, the women's movement, and the equality movement for our LGBT brothers and sisters are all manifestations of these rights. I thank President Obama for raising the importance of organizing to the highest level of merit and honor," end quote. Now,
I love her so much.
She is the best. I'm telling you, there's so much great stuff on her. Like we all need to know Dolores Huerta. Now, as of 2015, she was a board member of the Feminist Majority Foundation, the Secretary Treasurer Emeritus of the United Farm Workers of America, and the president of the Dolores Huerta Foundation that you can find at DoloresHuerta.org. Okay. That's her name, DoloresHuerta.org, DoloresHuerta.org. In 2017, there was an American documentary directed by Peter Bratt on the life of Dolores Huerta, the Chicana activist.
Yes.
It was produced by Brian Benson for PBS with Benjamin Bratt and Alpita Patel serving as consulting producers and Carlos Santana as executive producer.
Oh my God.
Now today at 93, Dolores Huerta continues to work tirelessly developing leaders and advocating for the working poor, women and children. As founder and president of the Dolores Huerta Foundation, she travels across the country, engaging in campaigns and influencing legislation that supports equality and defends civil rights. She often speaks to students and organizations about issues of social justice, and public policy. And I will say that one of her daughters has become president and taken over most of the the activities to give her mom a little bit of rest. But she is just a remarkable, like, beautiful, beautiful spirit, beautiful American hero.
Yes.
And that is just the tip of the iceberg of the life and legacy of Dolores Huerta.
That she's like a stunning human.
Really, truly.
I don't know how else to wrap my head around
her. And funny, like in her TED Talk, she was just like, there's only one race, human race, and we all come from Africa.
Thank you, so Dolores. This is so stupid.
You know, like, let's just, like, yeah, that's how that is.
That's just what it is.
But she's just a sweet lady, and I'm just so glad she's being given her flowers. She needs to be given more of her flowers, but... That is my notorious woman for this week, Dolores Huerta.
Thank you so much for her.
My pleasure.
I have a wonderful woman because I have a theme. Now, it is following this theme of fall election season, but you're not going to realize why necessarily till I get to some place. Have you ever heard of a woman named Eartha Kitt?
Yes.
How have you really? Okay, it's Eartha Kitt today. Yes.
My favorite Catwoman.
The best Catwoman.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Julie Newmar. You were great.
Yeah, we love you, but
when Eartha Kitt came in, it was like I was a child, and I was like, "Who is this?" Yeah. And my mother was like, "Yes, that was the correct response. I raised her right," is what it got. So Earthic hit. Now, I have a few sources. So I got that it was Eartha Mae Keith, but perhaps it was Kit. I don't know when.
No, I think she changed. I think it was like a stage name, Kit.
Yeah. But and then Eartha Mae also saw that her father was John Kit, but her parentage is in question.
That exactly. Right. I know that much about her. Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, Eartha Kit. I'm jealous. You got to Eartha Kit before me.
Sucka.
Did you say sucka?
I did.
Is this the 70s? I love sucka.
Girl.
I love it.
Sucka. Girl.
It's only second to Jive Turkey. Go ahead.
Do you know, I've been saying that my whole life. I don't even know where I got it. It's just culture.
God, I love it. You saw some movie from the 70s.
Yeah. And then I was like, yeah, that's how I talk.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Also, I saw Hamilton and now I'm a rapper. This is just what I do.
You're so American.
Oh my God. Yes. That's a fact. Okay. So she was born. Okay. She's born in the small town of North South Carolina. Say that three times fast.
My people in the South, I tell you, I'm special.
Yeah, I blame you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should.
So she was born on January 17th, 1927. So her mother was Annie Mae. She is of Cherokee and African descent. Her mother was. Her father, as I said, unsure, probably... the son of the owner of a plantation where she was born, and probably it was the result of a rape. I'll just say it.
So for those who don't live in the United States, what we would say is her mama black and her daddy white.
There you go.
Because black people in the South love to be like, I'm part Cherokee. Are you really?
Her mama committed to the bit, okay? Because it made the Wikipedia page, okay?
Okay.
And perhaps daddy was John Kit, but
yeah, could be.
Again, like, yeah, we don't fully know. The odds of this being like a loving situation or not
are very low. Yeah.
Very low. So she soon went to live with a black man who they were together, the mother and this new man, but he did not accept Eartha because she was too light skinned. And so he made her mama kick her out. So when she was four, she went to a relative, her Aunt Rosa. But in this household, she was abused.
Can you imagine? I wish a man would tell me my baby can't stay with me. Motherfucker. But women didn't have a lot of choices.
I mean,
and who knows the shame that her mother had? Because nowadays, mixed kids is not a source of shame. But back then,
it's a totally different thing.
Those of you not from the United States, first of all, we don't have mixed kids since the beginning of time here in the United States.
Beginning of time.
They would call them mulatto, which is an insult, means mule.
Yeah,
so you should not use that term. And so oftentimes black women were raped. These kids were the result. And neither the black people nor the white people wanted these kids around.
It's pretty disgusting.
Because it's also a reminder to the mother of what happened. If I decided to keep the child, because that really wasn't the option back then either.
Right.
I would never take something out on a child. Period. Nope. Point blank. Period. The child is always innocent in this situation.
Yep.
But many people did not act in that way.
Listen, tell me, I can't see my baby again. See what happens.
I know, especially because you couldn't hide it because she was so light skinned.
Yeah.
Because sometimes mixed kids are not that light, but
she was
Eartha
very light.
Was pretty light. Yeah.
So then, okay. So I'm a little like, and then her mom died, so she was sent to live with another close relative named Mamie Kit. So this is what, so I think she took that last name. I don't know.
Also, yeah, it's hard to tell with celebrities from back in the day because there's a lot of like PR stuff that went on after the fact because Kit falls very in line with her persona. as being right. cat-like.
And then I read that she came to believe that this woman was actually her biological mom. But like, right? Yeah. So, but she wasn't.
Yeah.
But I also think there was so much trauma.
Yeah.
That maybe she created a persona in order to function, yeah. which makes sense to me. And
no matter what, she didn't feel loved as a little one. And that's a tragedy because babies should always feel loved. Yeah, that makes me very sad.
Every single baby should feel wanted.
Loved. Yeah.
And that's why we need freedom and productive rights. Okay.
Amen to that.
All right. Okay. So this relative was in Harlem, New York City. Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
She went to the Metropolitan Vocational High School, which later became the High School of the Performing Arts. Fame! I'm gonna live forever. Did I just hit a note there? What?
You guys should look up Fame. They should remake Fame.
They should remake Fame.
Yeah.
It'll be all about like TikTok videos and shit. No, we'd hate it.
I know. It's kind of hard. I was going to say, yeah. Honestly, it's probably hard. It wouldn't hit the same because it's just, yeah, people are doing it online now.
Can't handle that. And then one source said she ran away at 16. Another source said she just went to this company. I don't know. You tell me. Hashtag not historians. And joined the Catherine Dunham Company. So this is 1943. She's 16. It was an all-black dance company. And she stayed with the troupe until 1948. They traveled through South America and Europe. Now, she became fluent in French during her years performing in Europe. She actually learned 4 languages while she was touring. She also recorded. So I'm going to skip around here because I got some interesting things about her. Okay. So she became Eartha Kitt, y'all. Go on.
Yeah. And I will say this. As much as like she was teased for being light skinned and probably the child of rape from a white man in the South, when she went to Harlem, that actually became a plus for her skin complexion.
Yeah.
So, it's even more confusing when you get older.
Can you imagine, Lovetta, the aliens landing on Earth and being like, wait, so the color of your skin, epidermis, so you rank based on color of skin, huh? Can you like take yourself out of this world?
It's crazy.
And like, be like, oh, okay. That's just weird. So she recorded many hits in the 40s. So she recorded Love for Sale, which is a beautiful song. Mm-hmm. And also a song, I haven't heard it yet, but it's called I'd Rather Be Burned by a Witch.
Oh.
And I love it.
And you know she did in that wonderful voice.
Oh, yes. Yeah. She spoke 4 languages, but she sang in 11.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There are many live recordings of her cabaret performances. Mm. In 1950, Orson Welles gave her first starring role in Dr. Faustus as Helen of Troy in his stage production. Now, 2 years later, she was cast in the revue New Faces of 1952. Now, if you love old Hollywood, like Lovetta and I do, and like old Broadway, right, which is kind of all connected, really. They did that every year. There was New Faces of 1951. There was New Faces. And it was like to bring up and coming performers out to the, which I wish they did now, right?
Yeah.
And because they kind of have it,
but it's not as...
It's not
industry
as
formatted as now. Like, you know, they have Variety will release their thing or something, but...
But it's not the same.
It's not the same.
So she sang the song Monotonous and Bal Petit Bal, which were 2 songs which she was very identified with her entire career. Now, 20th Century Fox in 1954 distributed an independently filmed version of the revue entitled New Faces. And one of the songs she sang was Santa Baby. Don't sing it as well as her. They had to rewrite. It's kind of rapey. Santa Baby, don't sing this song anymore. All right. There's a great on our Instagram. Go back to like December, of these two women who are a couple talking about coming out to their parents with a song. It's beautiful. It's amazing.
It's so cute.
It's so good. Okay. So the rest of the 50s and 60s, she recorded, she worked in film, television, she worked in nightclubs. She went back to the Broadway stage. She played in a play called Mrs. Patterson and Shinbone Alley. And then there was a play, Jolly's Progress, that was short-lived. Now, she was well-renowned as a beautiful singer with a very distinctive voice. Y'all, I mean, you know I'm going to post so much this week with her singing. Okay. But it's just, she's a classic.
Oh, yeah.
So there was an allegation that Orson Welles and her had an affair during the 1957 run in Shinbone Alley. But she denied. And you know what? Believe women. So none of our damn business.
She also did say she had a threesome with a... This is what I heard. Don't quote me on it. Allegedly. Paul Newman and Rebel Without a Cause guy. James Dean.
Mm-hmm. That is a good day. Eartha Kitt. Yes, queen. I didn't read it, but I would like
to. Have you seen young Paul Newman? I'm more of a Robert Redford girl. Ooh. I love me some Robert Redford. Oh, so dreamy.
Listen.
Young Paul Newman, I would not kick out of bed either.
I would, both of them are in my bed. I can't choose. Why should she?
Allegedly, yes, I don't know if this is true, but I heard that and I was like, oh, like you said, that's a good day.
Little glass of wine when you're done. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, my word. Well, I know.
Exhausting. Okay. Eartha Kitt's got to get what Eartha Kitt needs. Okay.
Hey, listen. She's my hero on that alone.
Yes. That's all I needed to say. End of podcast. Bye.
oh, yes.
So, boring news about her. She marries this guy named John William McDonald, who was an associate of a real estate company. They married in 1960. Their daughter, Kit McDonald, born 1961. Then they separated in 1963. Then they divorced in 1964. Boring. Moving along. Point is, she had a lovely daughter. Okay. So yes, she lived in a converted barn on a sprawling farm in Connecticut. That was like her home. You know, she traveled, she toured, she did things, but that was where she lived. Now, she was active in a bunch of social causes in the 50s and 60s. In 1966, she established the Kittsville Youth Foundation, which it was a chartered and nonprofit organization for underprivileged youths in the Watts area of Los Angeles. Mm. She was also involved with a group of young people in the area of Anacostia in Washington, D.C., who called themselves Rebels with a Cause. So the groups.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember this?
Well, that's a play on, you know, Anna LaCosta is like one of her famous movies with Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's really, really good. I highly recommend people watch it. She's a bad girl. It's great performance. Yeah.
Also, if the James Dean thing is true, you know, Rebels with a Cause. I'm just connecting things.
Just saying. I mean, just, you know.
Okay. Yes, girl. And so the group, what they were doing is they were cleaning up the streets. They were establishing recreation areas in an effort to keep them out of trouble. And she testified before the House General Subcommittee on Education of the Committee on Education and Labor to get that financial support in order to do it. So she did the work, man. Mm-hmm. She also was a member of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. In 1964, she helped open, like, she is all over the place. I could do three episodes on her. So I'm just gonna kind of I'm picking berries off a tree here. All of them delicious. All of them delicious. She opened the Circle Star Theater in San Carlos, California. And in the late 1960s, she joined the cast of the TV series Batman as Catwoman. Batman. Okay.
I don't know if we can afford Batman.
No, we can't afford this episode, y'all. unless y'all want to sponsor us. Okay.
Now, keep in mind, Dolores Huerta is working with the farm workers this time, right? Yes. And Earth is doing what she's doing over in Watts and in Hollywood. So I love this. They're lining up.
Also, okay, I did not know this. You probably did. January 18th, 1968, during Lyndon B. Johnson's administration, she was at a White House luncheon. And she was asked by First Lady Lady Bird Johnson about the Vietnam War. And Eartha, she had opinions and said, quote, "You send the best of this country off to be shot and maimed. No wonder the kids rebel and take pot." Because that's how they phrased it back then. End quote.
Yeah.
During the question and answer session at this luncheon, she said, quote, "The children of America are not rebelling for no reason. They are not hippies for no reason at all. We don't have what we have on Sunset Boulevard for no reason. They are rebelling against something. There are so many things burning the people of this country, particularly mothers. They feel they are going to raise sons, and I know what it's like, and you have children of your own, Mrs. Johnson. We raise children and send them to war." End quote. Supposedly.
That's another thing. Mm-hmm. Young people forget, like, young people were dying in the Vietnam War.
Yes.
Like Dolores Huerta is fighting for the farm workers. Cause remember we were saying you need that. Civil rights is still being fought in the South in a lot of ways and in the North, but the whole war is like affecting all these groups.
Yeah.
And then they were protesting on all these on all the college campuses. And they were even being shot.
Yeah.
Kent State. Like, because they were like, stop trying to get us the poor, particularly the poor people and the people of color being shot and sent over to Vietnam that, you know, this is an unwinnable war. And like, but for her to say it,
she said it
the first lady out loud
to her face. Mrs. Johnson supposedly burst into tears. Okay.
Oh, God. The white lady tears.
You know them so well. Yes.
Oh, yes. Shit.
Yeah. Reality, stop. You know, they don't like reality. Freaks them out.
Oh, God.
And so this inspired the CIA to create a dossier.
Not the CIA.
Yeah, the CIA.
Not the FBI. Well, the FBI too, probably.
Probably. I read the CIA, but, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm sure everyone was like, oh, no.
Because also back then, they thought every non-white person who spoke out was a communist. They probably thought Dolores was a communist.
Unless you were still a white person standing there on your plantation and church of the correct denomination every week,
keep in mind, this is after the Blacklist destroyed so many people's careers in the 50s.
Oh, and that's the thing. This wasn't the 50s, right? This
right.
is like 1968.
So you think it's over. Yeah.
But it is believed that this is what pretty much ended her career in the United States. Now, it didn't end her career, but in the United States.
No, they canceled her in the United States. She literally was canceled. Like they canceled all her contracts in the United States.
The CIA branded her, quote, a sadistic nymphomaniac. Now, here's the thing. I'm not here to judge anyone's sex life, okay? But I don't think she's sadistic. All right, y'all. Okay.
They called any woman who likes sex a nymphomaniac.
Every single woman who thought, "Oh, that was fun," they were like nymphomaniac, but also have sex with me. You guys, you can't have it both ways. You either make us like it, so we'll do it, or we'll walk away.
No, some of them actually like it when we don't like it, unfortunately. Well, some of them actually like it when we don't like it.
They can die in a fire. Those guys can die in a fire.
Oops. Miriam, I'm so proud. I've rubbed off on you, obviously.
Yeah, a little bit. I do not have time for men who are like that. All right, so... So the dossier was discovered by Seymour Hersh, who was a journalist, in 1975, and they asked they asked Eartha for her opinion on said dossier. And she said, quote, "I don't understand what this is about. I think it's disgusting." And she went off to Europe and Asia and made all of her money there. So, but she, like, in the 70s, she appeared on television in BBC's variety show, The Good Old Days.
Not the good old days.
Yeah, the good old days, you know, when no one had rights. So much better. Remember?
So much better, yeah.
You could control all the people.
When America was great.
Yeah, back then. Yeah, when America was great. They were like, yay. Let's make a show about it.
Yeah.
So in 1978, she joined the West End production of Follies and then returned at the end of that run to start in a one-woman show at Shaftesbury Theatre to tremendous acclaim. She sang the song "I'm Still Here." That was, see, we're not going to owe a dollar for that song because I didn't even get the rhythm right.
I heard it in my heart.
Thank you. Because it wasn't in your ears. That's for sure. And the audience like adored the shit out of her. She returned to Broadway to perform in a show called Timbuktu, which earned a Tony nomination for her role. Mm. Now, she also, in the 80s, and I'm going to kind of like, she did a 1984, she's a disco song, "Where Is My Man?" Which was the first certified gold record of her career. It hit the top 40 in the US, and the UK single chart hit number 36, the top 10 on the US Billboard dance chart. The single was followed by the album "I Love Men." I love that she just embraced her persona.
She's the precursor for "It's Raining Men."
Yes. Like I was just going to say, she found new audiences in nightclubs across the United States and the UK, whole new generation of gay male fans. And she would give benefit performances in support of HIV AIDS organizations.
Yes. Yes.
And she, in 1989, her hit "Cha-Cha Heels" was originally intended to be recorded by Divine, but she did it. And it did so good. In 1988, she replaced Dolores Gray in the West End production of Stephen Sondheim's Follies as Carlotta. Once again, singing the song "I'm Still Here." Once again, standing ovations because the CIA, it didn't work. Bastards.
Yeah, you gotta outlast those bastards.
Now, she became a vocal advocate for LGBTQ plus rights. It was called LGBT at the time.
Yeah.
And publicly supported same-sex marriage, which she considered a civil right. Mm-hmm. Now, she was quoted saying, quote, "I support gay marriage because we're asking for the same thing. If I have a partner and something happens to me, I want that partner to enjoy the benefits of what we have reaped together. It's a civil rights thing, isn't it?" End quote.
Yep.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes, it is. So she famously went to many LGBTQ fundraisers. She said, quote, "We're all rejected people. We know what it is to be refused. We know what it is to be oppressed, depressed, and then accused. And I am very much cognizant of that feeling. Nothing in the world is more painful than rejection. I am a rejected, oppressed person. And so I understand them as best I can, even though I am a heterosexual." She never stopped fighting. She never stopped going to fundraisers. She died at 81 of colon cancer with her daughter right by her side. And she and her daughter were very close her whole life, which I think is just, hold on, I'm looking for something.
Yeah. And while you're saying that, you did not mention one of my favorite performances.
Okay. I didn't
Eartha
do it. Yeah.
In the 1992 Boomerang film called Boomerang. With Eddie Murphy.
I wrote it down, but I didn't say it. You're right.
It has the distinction of being an all-black cast.
Yes.
And it is one of the fun. Not only is her performance, she should have been nominated for an Oscar. So does Grace Jones. Both of them, several people in that movie. But those two, because they have smaller parts, but they steal every scene they're in.
Oh my God. I love that movie. I don't remember anything about it. I remember watching it and loving it. and nothing about it.
She tries to seduce Eddie Murphy's characters, and she's just like, Marcus. She does it in that that's a terrible Eartha Kitt impersonation, but it is so... I highly, highly recommend if you guys have never seen that movie. It is so funny.
And if you have children, she's in all the Emperor's New Groove versions. Yes. She's won Annie Awards. She won 2 Emmys for Kronk's New Groove and Emperor's New School. I mean, she is everywhere. Also, I didn't mention this, but in 2003, she replaced Cheetah Rivera in the musical 9 on Broadway. Right. And I'm pissed because I was living in New York at the time.
Oh, I could have seen it. Can you imagine?
She also did a national tour of Cinderella in 2000. Like, I have her whole bio right here. In 2006, she co-starred in Mimi LeDuc off-Broadway. I should have seen that as well, because I could have afforded the ticket because it was off-Broadway.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention, total side note, real quick. In 2000, she performed in The Wild Party. Short-lived run. Now, remember last week we were talking about, I was like so sure that Christine Keeler's story was The Wild Party. I was very wrong. Nope.
Okay.
It was a different story.
Okay.
My bad. So in February 2022, the New Yorker made a short documentary called Catwoman versus the White House, directed by Scott Calonico. Don't know if that was right. And they used photos, clippings, and footage to show how she disrupted the White House luncheon and what she did with that. I mean, I actually think that's the coolest thing she did.
You know
what I mean? Like, she used her power for good. And you know what? She left America, and you know what? She still made her money, and you know what? She came back to standing ovations.
Yeah.
So this girl did the thing and stood up for what needed to be stood up for.
Yeah. Eartha Kitt's amazing. I read her autobiography like years and years ago.
Yeah.
And I just remember her being like, when this happened, she was devastated because she thought she's American. I'm standing up for what is right. But you know how they people are like, they canceled me. No, they literally canceled her. And it was devastating. She to have to go to Europe to make a living, because she's like, I have to make a living. But also you want to be able to make a living in your own home country. So like
the thing that I noted with her is that she always knew that she was somewhat of an outsider.
Yeah.
Like even here.
Yeah.
That's like I kind of got that from her, that it was like, she wasn't black. She wasn't white. Right. But
she, yes. And I will say with her though, because of the time, because listen, I'm not going to get into the mixed, I'm not mixed, so I'm not getting into that. But like of the time, mixed people, and even like today, people would choose for you because she's clearly a black woman, even if she's a very light skinned woman. So even the issues she may have had within her community, because dark skinned people have the same issue within their community, feeling like you're not fully accepted, that there's something wrong with you. You still find that love of your people. And you know where that comes from. It comes from white supremacy, really, because
of course
it wouldn't be an issue if white supremacy wasn't a problem in America. Right.
Yeah.
But I always felt like she never was like, well, I'm not a black woman. No. Eartha was like, I'm a black woman. Like,
yeah, no, 100%.
There's none of that. It's not like she had a relationship with her father either. But I feel like her feeling like never feeling that love at a young age, whatever the circumstance was probably led to that feeling of not feeling like you fully belonged.
Yes.
And then being told by your government that you're basically blackballed. Like, she basically experienced blackballing the blacklist, but later on.
Yeah.
And that's probably not only because she was passionate about the Vietnam War and civil rights in general, but the fact that you're thinking the blacklist is over, right? Like
she's thinking when she went in 1968 to this luncheon that this is her opportunity to speak up, that this is a democracy, and that she has enough clout,
right,
where she can speak up and then continue on with her life. And the fact that the CIA immediately labeled her, and that's why, like, some of the things I'm like, I don't know, because they were trying to push some shit about her.
Yeah, they overreacted.
To like shut her down.
Yeah.
But I love that she wasn't actually shut down. And when she came back, she did come back to a lot of love. Maybe not from the government, but the government could suck my dick. Okay.
Yeah, and by that time, people were sick of the government shit, the FBI, and they were sick, like the regular people were sick of their shit. And so, like, it's kind of like what's happening now. Like, we're sick of the MAGA shit at this point.
Like, we're just exhausted and we don't. And just
it's like,
go the
we're not doing
away.
That. It's like, yeah, fuck off. We're not doing that. Go and fuck a couch, allegedly. Like, don't, like, not. And I mean, I will say this one anecdote I heard about her. So Sammy Davis Jr., he's a very interesting man. We love Sammy Davis Jr., but he gave money to Martin Luther King and all that other stuff. But he would also like let white people, we feel in the black community, kind of insult him to his face. Right. So Nixon was running. I forget which year it was, but Nixon was running and Sammy Davis Jr. famously performed at his camp, I think at the RNC or something, and went up and hugged him. Apparently, Eartha Kitt later on was like, because black people were pissed. And he got a really big backlash in the black community, and he was very hurt by that. But it's like, you went and hugged
your
Nixon.
Oppressor.
And apparently, Eartha Kitt was like, did you have to hug him?
Shake his hand.
She was so disgusted. So she may have had her issues with colorism in our community, but there is no doubt about it. She thought of herself as a black woman and she loved black people. But she was just that's 100%. A whole side story. We were like, she's like, did you have to hug him?
That's great. I'm glad you have that story. I did not.
It's crazy.
That's awesome.
But she's an amazing woman. Thank you so much.
You're
Eartha Kitt. Go and look her up. She is amazing. Go and look up Dolores Huerta. She's amazing. Yeah. And more importantly, tell your friends about us and go and give us a review in the Apple Store. A five-star review.
Five-star review. And then like pretty please. We were saying pretty please with a cherry on top. Okay.
Yes. And thank you again for joining us, listeners, for this latest episode of Notorious Women. Like we said, please give us a 5-star review in the Apple Store. That helps people find us. Also, if you want to give us some shekels, some moolah, some okane,
dinero.
You can do that at patreon.com/notoriouswomen. That's patreon.com/notoriouswomen. And Miriam, how else can they support the show and find us?
Y'all, we're on Instagram. It's Notorious Women Podcast. Come follow us there. Like us. Talk to us. You can DM us there if you want to. You can also email us at notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. If you have bigger things to tell us, which is always welcome. And then we also have a YouTube. You can listen to episodes there. And that's it's also Notorious Women Podcast. It's very simple.
Yes. And also, if you want to correct something we said, or if you want to compliment us on our singing, you can do that.
always.
We welcome that.
And if you have like suggestions or like fixes, or you're like, you forgot to tell this story about this person, we will do it on the next episode. Let us know.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Miriam. And we will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.